2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at Honda.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Morning, you lot.
Oh, hello, Croaky. Oh, somebody got a hangover.
Wakey, wakey.
Yeehaw.
Good morning.
Yeah, 7 a.m. here.
Austin.
Oh, God, that's not early.
No, it's not, I'm not. I didn't say it was early. I was just giving you a time check.
Why do you sound so croaky, then?
I am a little bit croaky. Slightly late night last night, but it's... Hey, celebrating a brilliant Grand Prix. What did you guys think?
Well, I have to say, I have a severe case of the double Fs, the fanfare FOMO, because Damon and I were not there at COTA this year. And didn't it look great, Damon?
Yeah, a little twinge of jealousy, I have to say, sitting at home watching everyone enjoying themselves. It was a fantastic show. I mean, it was a show. I mean, it was a proper Formula One showing everything it's got in the best way possible. And I wasn't there.
All singing, all dancing, jazz hands. The Americans just do sports so well, and the race did not disappoint.
Oh, Pink. I mean, the atmosphere at the track on all 3 days, you know, Friday practice, this place was packed out. There was more than 140,000 people every day, truly passionate fans who were staying until gone 10 o'clock each evening. I went to watch Billy Joel on Saturday night, went back to the... Yeah, he was great, by the way. Age 72,
wow.
behaving like a teenager, voice band. But the fans were still lining the paddock. I went back afterwards at 10 o'clock to get my car, and fans everywhere just waiting for a glimpse of people from Formula One. Just a true, true passion. Like I haven't seen before. That was the 9th race that we've had at COTA, and it was unlike anything I've seen before.
It was kicking off, wasn't it?
Okay, so you're excused for being a bit croaky this morning then.
But the other thing is, you know, Austin has changed. The whole city has been rammed all weekend. You can't get into a restaurant without, you know, it's a 2-hour wait if you haven't booked. Wonderful place to go for a motor race.
It was a hell of a comeback, to be honest, after 2 years of not going there.
It was brilliant.
Welcome to the F1 Nation podcast with Tom Clarkson, Damon Hill and me, Natalie Pinkham.
It's lights out, away we go. Hamilton gets away well and he's getting towards Max Verstappen now, tries to cover him off and pushes Max Verstappen wide. Hamilton is just ahead of Verstappen. Lewis Hamilton got the dream start that he wanted.
He's sliding a lot and has a lot more pace, so... I just want to tell you.
Verstappen goes through turn one in the lead, then Hamilton comes out in second place. So the lead has changed hands once again. And now to the checkered flag. Hamilton has got the chase on. Hamilton's given it absolutely everything. Verstappen is keeping his cool. He's keeping his calm and composure. And he is keeping the lead as well. Max Verstappen wins the US Grand Prix. Lewis Hamilton has to settle for second. The charge got close, but not quite close enough.
Oh, yes, guys. Unbelievable.
Wow. Sheer class, Max. That was classy. What a drive. What a try.
But what a victory for Max Verstappen.
It was a terrific race because it was so finely balanced all the way through. And there's a little bit of gamesmanship. Some of those radio calls were... I was surprised that Lewis was on the radio saying, you know, I can't keep up the pace, as he does sometimes. And you think, why are you giving the game away? And then, you know, Max was saying, you know, I can see him sliding around, and then pitted and completely outfoxed Mercedes, got track position back from his pole position that he lost, in effect, and then dominated or controlled a very, very tight race. It was thrilling from beginning to end.
It's wonderful to see the two best drivers of the season going almost wheel to wheel. Although I felt it smouldered, but never quite sparked. I think if we'd had another five laps, that's the moment that I think we would have had a brilliant race. But watching that final stint, I never really felt that Lewis Hamilton was going to take the lead of that race.
I know what you mean. Yes, I do know what you mean. I mean, because it's one thing to chase someone down. It's another thing to pass him. And I think that Max would have made himself three times as wide not to let him pass. You know, so hungry he was for that victory.
What do we do, Tom? We just keep racing until Lewis has won it? Or what?
Yeah, just keep adding laps.
You know, I know what you mean. You wanted to see them wheel to wheel. There was a start, which was was pretty hot. I mean, the first lap of that was right up there with all the top first laps we've ever seen in
that
Formula
was
One,
brilliant.
I think. You know, going yeah. through the field.
And they kept it clean. They kept it clean in turn one.
But, you know, the nail biter was whether or not Lewis would get within the 1 second and get his DRS open. And he seemed to get close enough, but then he couldn't. He obviously couldn't get close enough because he didn't open his DRS. So he never got a shot at that passing move and ran out of laps before he ran out of tyres. But the tension, I think, was what was great all the way through. And I think the other thing was that the fans and the crowd seemed to be relating to it and getting it. Everyone seemed to be clued in as to what the importance of the strategy and what the guys were really doing in the cars. So the tension was right the way through.
Yeah, I totally agree. It felt like this was the race that finally cracked America.
Pinks, the thing we need to remember is that Red Bull had the fastest car this weekend. Max Verstappen was on pole by 0.2 of a second. He had more rear grip. And that's where you, on a highly abrasive circuit like the one at COTA, with all those fast corners, particularly in Sector 1, it's the rears that let go. And he had the faster car. So the moment Lewis got ahead of him, and he was able to sit on Lewis's gearbox in that first stint, that's the moment when I think they knew they could be aggressive. They had the faster car, and therefore they could pit him earlier. And I think Mercedes were very nervous about their pace on the medium tyre. If they'd known in that first stint how much better Lewis would have been on the hard tyre, I think they would have pitted him earlier and we would have had a more interesting strategic race. But I think because they thought they just didn't have the pace of Red Bull, they went long and it was never going to... Once Max had taken the lead at the pit stop, it was never going to change.
Okay, so is that your point then, that actually the Red Bull strategy was reactive? Because Lewis certainly had a great start, but felt... on reflection that they'd been on the back foot all weekend, Red Bull had had the upper hand all weekend. And yet FP1 pace contradicted that.
Well, the drop off on these Pirelli tyres is such that, you know, the undercut is a very powerful tool. So I think if you're sat in the Red Bull strategy office, you know you've got a faster car and you know that the undercut is going to work for you. So even though Lewis was leading, I think it was pretty clear that Max was going to take the lead of the race at the pit stops.
I want to get to the bottom of how much influence Adrian had, because Adrian had this little whoopsie here on a bicycle in the summer, and you know he's been away from it a bit, but he was back there this weekend in Austin, and as Natalie said, Red Bull did not look on the pace on the first, you know, from the very get-go, and Mercedes looked like they had an advantage, but they worked away and they got better and better, and some people feel that in Turkey, Red Bull were just not optimising the car. And actually, it wasn't so much that Mercedes had found something. It was more that Red Bull had lost something or not extracted the very best from their setup. But they certainly got better and better over the weekend in Austin.
And ironically, Damon, at a circuit where we certainly weren't predicting that to be the case, this is supposed to be a Mercedes stronghold. And yet again, that's contradicted.
I think they were really quite shaken by this result. I think that they, you know, they know that they've got a really tough battle now to cling on to the title. And Lewis was, he gave it his everything, didn't he? Out of the car, he was kind of, he was still a bit exhausted, I think, from trying everything and a little bit defeated. But he won't give up, and neither will Mercedes. But it's definitely advantage Red Bull and Max Verstappen, I think. The other thing I want to mention is the role that Sergio played, because actually during the race, Sergio was actually squeezing Lewis, and Lewis wasn't able to drop back and save tyres quite as much as he probably wanted to, because at one point it was only 4 seconds behind him. And then, you know, so I think they, as a team, Red Bull did a fantastic job of using all their weapons at their disposal. And of course, Valtteri had this penalty. So he was down in the dumps, you know, down at the back. He wasn't able to get up the front and help out Lewis.
I think the first practice session on Friday that you've just referred to was very misleading, because Mercedes were 1-2. Max Verstappen didn't get a lap together in that session. He had traffic all the way through. So we all thought Mercedes were going to be as quick as people had predicted. But then when you speak to Mercedes, as I did after the race on Sunday evening, I said, how confident were you after FP1? And they said, well, initially very confident, but then FP2, when Checo Perez was actually fastest, that was the realistic picture. And we realised now that he said two things. One, we'd been running our power unit in FP1 slightly higher, turned up slightly higher than normal. And secondly, we didn't realise at the time just how much Max had been affected by traffic in FP1. So they had this unrealistic picture in FP1, but actually FP2 was the picture of the weekend. And Lewis Hamilton put in a fantastic qualifying lap to get on the front row. But that was as much coming from the driver, really, than the performance of the car. But, you know, Bottas was fourth quickest prior to his penalty, and that was a more realistic picture of where the car was this weekend.
Could have been useful though, couldn't he? I mean, he could have played a part if he'd managed to get ahead of Sergio in the race a little bit, you know. But it's tight. It's so tight. It's absolutely brilliant that it's come to this. And, you know, we got these two titans. I think they showed their class and why they are so brilliant. It's just seeing them extract the very best from the very best drivers there are out there. It was fantastic to watch.
And the fact that we're saying that 12 points is a decent lead, that's still very slim, isn't it? You know, only one DNF, either way.
I think it's going to be difficult for Max to keep his cool now, because he's sort of got just a tiny little glimpse of light at the end of the tunnel. And he, you know, that's that little light that says you're a world champion. And I think, my God, to keep you cool now, you know that it can all swing the other way. In some senses, it's yours to lose, you know. So you've almost got it, but you can lose it. And that is a tension as much as it's a relief. Sometimes it's harder to kind of hold this precious thing and protect it than it is to chase after something. I mean, Lewis has often said he'd prefer to be the predator than the prey. What has Lewis actually got to attack with? And it looks like he's losing his ability, or he's losing the things he needs to attack Max. So I think in some senses, Max is comfortable with the fact that the car can do the job for him and he can do the job. But it's much more difficult as you get closer and closer to the final destination.
What about the fact that Max hasn't actually won a car single-seater championship in his career? He only did Formula 3 after karting. Is that going to be weighing on his mind?
It's like me then, Tom. I never won a championship until I won a Formula. I only ever won two championships. One was the Champion of Brands Motorcycle Championship, and the other one was the Formula One World Championship.
I still think there's more pressure on Lewis than there is on Max, because I think that Max will get his chance again and again and again. Mm. And Lewis wants to go for that historic eighth title. Mm. And really, this could be his last chance of doing it.
I think the sense was that Mercedes and Lewis quite disappointed not to have got that win, because I think they needed it. And now we're going to races where altitude and the fragility of the Mercedes power unit, or at least the ice anyway, you know, might mean they have to turn it down a bit more than they want to at that fantastic altitude that Mexico City is at. But We don't know.
Well, do you know what, though, Damon? It's so interesting because we've tried to make these predictions all season and they've always backfired, haven't they? I think this is the season that just keeps springing surprises. And it could well be that Mercedes aren't at such a disadvantage at the next two circuits.
We don't know.
You're not convinced.
Well, we don't know. That's a good
thing. We just don't know. It's a great thing.
Yeah, but there was so much good action all the way through the field. That I mentioned the first lap. I just think, you know, when you watch the dicing that went on all through the field, I think that that also was a great advert for Formula One, wasn't it? It just shows that the people are not just making up the numbers. There's so much at stake. And the constructors' fight between McLaren and Ferrari, and also the kind of naughtiness of Fernando Alonso. I thought it was great seeing Raikkonen and Fernando Alonso combined age of about 82 years old or something. You know, it sounds very old, but they are the oldest drivers out there. But they were giving it everything. It was fantastic to watch.
Just a quick word before we move on to those battles that you mentioned, Damon, on Checo. Now, I want to know, just how tough is it to do a whole race without a drink?
Well, it depends, obviously. That is quite, I think that circuit is quite a hard track to drive. Lots of 20 corners, and some of them are very high G, and there's lots of change of direction through those S's. And it was quite warm, I believe, Tom. Was that right? Did you have a drink, Tom, during the race? I bet you did.
What kind of drink?
Well, you're not allowed to drink anything, you know, too strong, are you?
Do you know what? I think Checo had been below par in terms of his health all weekend. He turned up on Thursday and was very croaky. Had certainly had a cold, whether it was something worse. So I think he'd been. I think that was what was tough for him in the race.
Well, he did say straight after the race, it was his physically most demanding race ever. And so, you know, maybe he's a bit run down. Maybe he needs some suns.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at Honda.com.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. All so that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Pinks, even Max had to take himself off before being interviewed after the race, just because he was feeling it.
Yeah, Max did sound out of breath. He did, didn't he? And it's quite rare, isn't it, on team radio that they're puffing and panting to that extent. But I just want to know from you, Damon, you must have had examples of this where you're just gasping for liquid.
Yeah. We did have drinks bottles, but I didn't usually drink the whole thing because after a couple of laps, it got hot and it was tasted revolting. But I used to just use it to wet the throat, you know, so I'd have a sip. But some races you did sweat a lot though. Thankfully, I never did the Malaysian Grand Prix. I only got as far as the first corner, but I was a bit worried about dehydration in that one. But the one that sticks in my mind is the race I had with Michael Schumacher in about, was it 94? Anyway, it was about 40 degrees in France and Magny-Cours, and they were hosing down the crowd. It was so hot. The fire brigade came in and kind of had great big hoses and spraying it everywhere. And anyway, off we went. I was getting beaten. Anyway, my drinks bottle wasn't working and I was dehydrated. I was overheating. The night before in my hotel, we didn't have any air conditioning at all. and I couldn't open the window because of the mosquitoes. So I slept naked on the bed with some wet towels and a fan blowing on me all night long.
Now, there's an image for you, ladies and gentlemen.
So that's the only way I could keep my temperature down. So I was already overheated before I even got to the race. Anyway, halfway through the race, I've got to come in for my tyre stop, and I get on the radio to tell the team, I need some water. I need some water. My drink's here. And when I got there, they were changing the tyres, and Patrick Head came out. I opened my visor and sort of my mouth open, expecting a fantastic, waterfall of cold liquid down my throat. And he chucked it down my neck. So I didn't get any water. I pit stopped it, and they changed the tyres, and he went, right, off you go. And I never got a drop of water. So by the end of that race, my head was banging a lot.
You're busy trying to wipe it off your neck and suck your gloves, try and get any kind of liquid.
Honestly, you sweat it out into your overalls, and actually, after a bit, you're no longer wet. You're dry because you've expended all your fluid, and you literally shrivel. You know, so things don't fit. When you get out, your trousers fall off you, and your watch doesn't fit and stuff like that. It's incredible. So dehydration is not to be recommended, but some people suffer more than others. And I was always staggered by Michael Schumacher. He used to get out of a race in Malaysia, not a bead of sweat on him. And he was sort of superhuman in that respect. But I definitely did not like the heat. And Checo did look a bit... I could tell when he was being interviewed at the end, he was having this thing where he was having to... He could talk for a bit, but he couldn't talk for too long. So he'll be recuperating right now and getting into... He won't be having a beer. I can probably... safely say that.
It was still his best weekend for Red Bull, I thought.
Yeah, I think it was fantastic. Yeah, definitely was right on cue just before the Mexican Grand Prix, wasn't it? And he did a fabulous job.
Actually, that's interesting how that will play out, because he does seem in a decent run of form. I mean, he nearly put it on pole. It got massively positive reaction from the crowd, as you say. When he goes to Mexico now, presumably he's going to have to give way if he is ahead of Max Verstappen.
Yeah, that's a problem that they might have to navigate their way through. But diplomatically, he conceded ground to Max in the S's in the first lap, was it? I think, or second lap. So, you know, I think he knows that he's there to help. But who would want to have to relinquish a possible Mexican Grand Prix victory if you're a Mexican driver?
He's doing a show car run on Wednesday in Mexico City. I mean, that is going to be something, isn't it? The whole place is going to grind. Well, it grinds to a halt anyway because of the traffic, doesn't it? But it's going to be...
Can't grind to any more of a halt, can it?
Yeah. But he was saying yesterday, he said, I cannot wait. It's going to be something else. Because he did a show car run in Dallas just before this race. And the reception he got there was incredible, apparently. But Mexico City will be something else, won't it?
And they will go there in such good spirits. Their 200th podium for Red Bull, double podium in Texas. You know, they're riding the crest of a wave at the moment, aren't they? When you consider... the swing from Turkey. I mean, I just find it such a crazy season that we're just swinging back. Which actually prompts me to ask you both again, have you reviewed your decision that you would prefer, given the choice, to be in a Mercedes than a Red Bull?
Yeah, I'm changing it virtually every race. I always did like the look of the Red Bull, but I've been surprised that sometimes it didn't look as strong. But, you know, it swings backs and forwards, doesn't it? A couple of tenths, maybe, every race. Where has there been much more than three-tenths of a gap? As Lewis had four-tenths on... Yeah, I think he might have been in Turkey, was quite a long way ahead, wasn't he? But as I said, I think that could have been as much Red Bull not getting their setup or maximising what they were doing. They probably needed a bit of Adrian Newey's magic kind of ingredients, whatever he does, you know, his magic wand.
I'm with you. I think we've all changed our minds, haven't we, since the last race, that the Red Bull is the one to beat. And I think that will stick for Mexico. But then if Brazil is another Red Bull race, yeah, probably want to be in it there. But then everyone is saying that Qatar is going to be more of a Mercedes track. So I want to be in both. In fact, no, I don't want to be in either. I want to be in Dale Earnhardt's 1984 Chevy Monte Carlo NASCAR. Did you guys see that? Did you see Daniel Ricciardo do his thing?
Did I see it? I went down in Devon with the kids. Yeah, I could see his smile across the pond. Oh. So big was that cheesy grin of his. I mean, that was wonderful, wasn't it?
The fans absolutely love Daniel Ricciardo here. Did you see there was a onesie? There's a Daniel Ricciardo onesie. I actually want one of them. It's quite early in the morning here. I had to take my onesie off because I was embarrassed for you guys to see it. I mean, Dan, he just does things differently. I don't know. The driver's parade, he was just wearing a Texas Longhorns top. There was no McLaren clothing or anything. You know, he and to be fair to Zach Brown, the boss of McLaren, he lets him do it because they see the bigger picture.
So they see the marketing benefit. I mean, it's what's good for Daniel's good for McLaren. I think it ranked this weekend as the most loved team by the fans at the moment. But also, you know, they're both performing well. They both seem happy, certainly much happier in recent races for Daniel. But it's just got good energy about it, hasn't it?
Carlos Sainz under pressure from Daniel Ricciardo trying to get in the slipstream, but he touched the back of the Ferrari and had to just drop back a bit. There goes Ricciardo. Here comes Lando Norris down the inside. It's Ferrari and McLaren. What a battle. Norris on the inside. Thought he got the place. Carlos Sainz is pushed wide and still somehow stays ahead of his former teammate. Ricciardo nips on the inside now. Lando Norris to get that place back. And it's all happening on lap one here.
Let's talk Ferrari and McLaren, because that was quite a battle, wasn't it?
It was terrific.
Guys, it's a really interesting battle, this Ferrari-McLaren one, isn't it? In that it does ebb and flow from race to race, except that Ferrari are getting some proper momentum now. Really strong in Turkey. They had the quicker car here as well, in Austin. And there's now only 3.5 points between them in the Constructors' Championship battle. So everyone's saying, oh, it's going to go down to the wire. But I think McLaren are on the back foot and they need to maximise what they've got at every race if they're going to hold on to that P3, because Ferrari are strong.
Tom, they should be strong. You know, we're witnessing them going through a bit of a dip in performance. I mean, there should be a front-running team with the budget they have, the experience they have. They should be right up there. I mean, McLaren obviously are not underfunded, but they're not nearly as funded as Ferrari are, and they've been doing an amazing job with what they've got. But Charles did a good job in the race, but nobody really saw it because he was sort of in no man's land.
So yeah, Leclerc P4, Sainz P7, Ricciardo P5 and Norris P8. So yeah, they definitely bounce out of COTA with more of a spring in their step.
Particularly Daniel Ricciardo, I think, had a really strong weekend. Outqualified Lando Norris, outraced him. Lando, interestingly, after the race, admitting that he didn't drive well this weekend. But Daniel's, there's something about him. I don't want to say this is the moment where it's going to turn good for Daniel Ricciardo. He's been strong since the summer break, but he looked really convincing this weekend over one lap and in the race and off track as well.
I mean, the state of mind of drivers is a really interesting subject. And you know, he eulogized about, you know, how much he loves going to the States. And I think sometimes that does lift your state of mind, your state, your performance, and you just get that extra, you find that thing that's been sort of resting or hiding away that you need to give you inspiration. And he definitely, I'd agree with you, he was definitely on good form in that race, as was Yuki Tsunoda, Natalie, I thought, this weekend.
Yes.
So, you know, you have something there to be pleased about. Yuki's back in your good books.
Yeah, well, so Yuki finished inside the points, P9. Not such a happy place the other side of the garage for poor old Pierre Gasly, DNF with suspension issues. And
Pinks, don't gloss over Yuki.
Oh, well, sorry. What else do you want me to say?
Well, I just, you know, you are the president and CEO of the Yuki Tsunoda fan club. Give us a bit more. Pinks, he was in Q3 as well for the second race in a row.
Yeah, fair play to him. I mean, it's a case of tough love. I haven't talked about him much recently and he's performing better. So I'm going to carry on with that and hope that he climbs up the order. First podium for the end of the season.
Yeah, that's a tall order. That would be amazing.
Yeah, okay, that's, yeah.
But
yeah.
We've got...
Pardon the pun.
We've got... Yeah. Okay, right. We're no more kind of heightist jokes. thank you. We had Shaq O'Neal basically putting everyone in the shade over the weekend.
I'm sorry, but that was a highlight for me. I mean, that was just brilliant. And did you notice that all the Red Bull mechanics swamped his crazy cartoonish vehicle that he
the
came
Longhorn
in?
The Longhorn vehicle.
They all jumped in it. And then he just made his way up to the podium. Well, he needn't have bothered. I mean, he could have just handed the trophy straight up to them from the ground.
Pink's really funny moment after the race was to watch Shaq having to bend down to walk into the FIA garage, right?
He just dipped his head, didn't he? I loved it. I want to see Yuki on the podium this time next year and Shaq giving him the because that would just be too cute. Yeah.
Fernando Alonso and Kimi Raikkonen as they go wheel to wheel, and Raikkonen gets pushed wide and they almost touch and come a cropper at turn one. Raikkonen and Alonso separated by half a millimetre, it seemed, going through there before Alonso had to back out.
Hey, Raikkonen overtook me outside turn one. I need the position. Copy.
Yeah, not a great day to be in an Alpine. Double DNF. And I don't know what you thought, Damon, about the whole Alonso Raikkonen incident. This idea that there are certain rules for some and not for others. I think the fans just want a bit of consistency, as do the drivers, don't they?
Yeah, but then we get. I mean, but there is a reality to this here, which is that there is such a thing as the edge of the track. And if you run off the edge of the track, I mean, we saw, I think even Max in qualifying, was it turn six, where he just went straight over the inside curb and kind of didn't make the hot, didn't go round the racetrack itself. So, and then that was happening a little bit during the race. And then, of course, with overtaking, people being pushed off, being pushed wide, and then coming back, getting on the gas on the runoff, and then getting a bit of a squirt on and getting their place back. Is that fair racing? And that's the debate. And that's what we haven't got an answer to right now, because that's what happened with Alonso and Raikkonen. And then later on, with Giovinazzi as well. And so Fernando just dove down the inside when was never going to make the corner, went onto the runoff and then rejoined and tried to fight for his position. So that was when the debate started as to when is it okay and when is it not okay to rejoin the track and keep your position. It's a problem because we have these runoffs, so drivers can get away with going wide. The trouble is whether they get away and also gain an advantage. I mean, he was a bit naughty in Russia, wasn't he, Fernando? He went straight across the runoff thing and rejoined the track and kind of avoided all the melee of getting through the traffic. I mean, whether he gained a position or not didn't really matter, because he just avoided having an accident or losing his front wing, which was quite clever. But he's testing those boundaries, isn't he? He's testing that argument.
That's what Fernando does, Damon.
That's what they should all do, though, isn't it?
In every department. But when it comes to track limits, one thing I've never fully understood is why the FIA specifies certain corners. So here in Austin, it was what? Turn 1, turn 9, turn 19. Why don't we just say that the white line is the track limit all the way around the racetrack?
And just dump a load of gravel on the other side of it.
Yeah. They used to. You know, they literally did have tracks with no runoff. You know, they had curbs because what used to happen was the inside of the curb would get worn away and there would be a great big hole. And then people would put a wheel in that and lose their wheel or crash. So they put curbs in. And gradually over time, they put more and more curbs in until eventually they tarmacked over the whole place. You know, and then just drew some lines on it. And so there has to be some jeopardy, I think, for running off the track. And grass seems to work really well. I mean, in slow corners anyway, you know, I don't see when you've got an exit of a corner, a bit of grass is a bloody good deterrent for putting a wheel off.
There were some curbs on the outside of turn one right up until the start of the race. But the W Series had their final round here in Austin.
Oh, yes. Congratulations to Jamie Chadwick.
Yeah, yeah. Second time she's won it, isn't it? But two.
She's earned herself $1 million.
Yeah. I don't think they want her back next year. I don't think she can do it again next year.
You can't keep coming back and taking the prize.
But two of their cars got launched over these exit curbs at turn one. So they took them out just before the start of the race. So that's why turn one suddenly became a track limits issue during the race. But there was a little bit of me that wanted them to stay. You know, you run wide, you might get launched over a curb or stay off the curb.
Well, anyway, it's always been a little bit of a bugbear. I mean, we had lots of laps disallowed after, was it turn 19? You know, that runoff on the last but one corner. And actually, Matt's got a warning during the race as well. And I thought that was a bit careless because you don't want to put yourself under that pressure. But, you know, there are some corners where they apply it and other corners they don't. And I think that Fernando, being Fernando, was testing the limits. And I thought it was fantastically entertaining. What can I say? I thought his dive down the inside of Giovinazzi was fantastic. And his battle with Raikkonen as well was fantastic. I thought that was pure entertainment.
Yeah, that's the point, isn't it? At this stage in his career, in a car like an Alpine, just go for it. I mean, what have you got to lose?
Yeah, well, we had Mario on last week, Natalie, and you know, he was very much in favour of just letting them fight. But the trouble is, he did say at the end, you know, and unless, of course, it's someone's deliberate, you know, deliberately crashes into someone, which happens, sadly, in our sport, it does happen. And let's hope it doesn't happen this season.
But on the topic of Alpine, really disappointing race this for them. Double DNF for the first time this year. And this comes just after Laurent Rossi, the big boss of Alpine, said, yep, we've got a 100 race plan to get the team to the top of Formula One. Well, there's only 99 to go now. And until they're going to be winning world championships.
Well, they've started at the bottom, so they can only go forward from there. But yeah, not too impressive. Shame, really, because they were looking quite punchy at one point. I thought they were on the move. I thought they were, you know, but the cars, they're still struggling a little bit to keep up with the pace of the development of the other guys. So we're going to have to wait for next year's car, the 2022, which was the 2021 car, the 2022 car, and see what they come up with.
And it's an interesting Constructors' Championship battle between Alpine in fifth and AlphaTauri in sixth. AlphaTauri now only 10 points behind Alpine. And I think the general consensus is that the AlphaTauri is the faster car.
Definitely. I mean, think how many points they've left on the table.
Yeah. And if your mate Yuki is now going to start delivering points, then I could, you know, Gasly had a suspension issue and couldn't finish the race here. But, you know, if they start banging in double points finishes, Alpine, that fifth place is looking dodgy for them.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at honda.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Damon, I really enjoyed your tweet about feeling strange about settling down.
Yeah.
At 10 o'clock at night for quali. I mean, it was kind of strange.
Yeah, I felt like I missed something. You know, it's like, surely I've missed it. You know,
yeah,
why are we coming
at
10 o'clock at night and I'm sitting down with a bowl of cornflakes and watching watching Formula One?
I know exactly what you mean. I couldn't work out if I loved it or it just felt incongruous in a way, because the race started at 8 o'clock. Now, I'm sure there will be other parents listening that, given that it's half term, didn't know whether to put their kids to bed before the race or after. My two were pushing and pushing and pushing, obviously, to stay up for the whole race. But of course, then they were climbing all over me, very difficult to concentrate on what was going on. And I let them stay up, and then I had to pause it, which I can never do. You can't pause live sport, chuck them in bed, come back out and restart the race. But of course, every 3 minutes, because I hadn't properly settled them down, mummy, they're coming back out again.
Our listeners will be very sympathetic, or slightly jealous of the fact that we can normally sit down during the daytime and have a fixed time. Other people have to get up at 3 a.m. or whatever, and around the world and watch races. So I was getting a few replies to the effect of, well, now you know what it's like.
I used to love, as a teenager, waking up in the middle of the night to watch the Japanese Grand Prix or the Australian Grand Prix. There was something so exotic about it.
Yeah.
I think it's easier to watch a race at 10 o'clock at night than, well, the people here in Austin are having to get up at 6, right? I'd rather watch it at 10 at night than 6 in the morning,
I think I can agree with that.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Well, they've done a fantastic job of, the reason they were so excited is because they were actually watching a race when they were awake.
So just how significant is this moment in the championship, do you think, chaps? It's an 18th win for Max. I think to beat Lewis Hamilton at COTA is a real coup in itself. And it feels as if the momentum is back with Max. It certainly is in terms of the points, a 12-point advantage. Is this defining?
I think Max will feel like he's got two fingers on the trophy. It's not a whole one-handed grip or even a two-hand grip yet, but it's definitely two fingers. And I think he'll know that. And I think there'll be a little bit more of a releasing of pressure for him going into the next few races.
I think he's given two fingers to Lewis Hamilton. I don't think the points gap is relevant at this stage. I think 12 points, it can ebb and flow. We're going to see many more twists and turns. So I think the points doesn't matter, but I think to beat Lewis at COTA, his track, you said earlier in the pod, Pinks, this has been a Mercedes stronghold. And for them to outwit them a little bit, but also to have the faster car here is a huge, huge psychological boost to Red Bull. And I think they'll ride that for a while.
It was great. You know, that's what they love. They relish it, don't they? They love those challenges. But it's been many years. I'm trying to rack my brains to think when I've seen a title lead in a championship change as many times as this during the season. It's a real switchback. And I'm thinking maybe it was Piquet and Mansell or something like that. I can't remember. You know, how long do you go back?
Well, was Rosberg Hamilton in 16 a bit like this? I can't remember.
But you're right, though, from race to race. It's not as if, you know, it's two or three races and then momentum swings back. It's like a game of table tennis, pinging backwards and forwards.
And what makes this so much more interesting than Rosberg Hamilton is the fact it's two different teams. There are so many more unknowns coming in. You know, we knew that they were
approaching it differently. Teams approaching it so differently. It's got everything.
I think already it's a classic season, and there's something down the line we don't know yet is coming. What is it? We shall see.
Okay, so here we go. Favourite bit of the show, once again, it's Ask Damon. So what have you got for us? Let's have the first question.
Hello, Damon. This is Carlos from São Paulo, Brazil. Last episode, you mentioned having the best car on the grid in 1996. It made me wonder about 1993. Do you also think that was the best car? And how do you compare these two? Thank you.
Carlos, you got me there. Actually, you know, I have to say 93 was also the best car. But the only thing I can say about 93 was that I had to play sort of second fiddle to Alain Prost a little bit. And it was my first season in Formula One, a full season in Formula One anyway. I knew I had the right equipment, but I wasn't able to perhaps do what I wanted to do as I could do in 96. So, I wasn't title favourite or anything in 93, but you're absolutely right. The car in 93 was an absolutely stonking car and basically wiped the floor with nearly everyone.
What was the active ride like, Damon?
Okay, so active ride is to explain to people who have no idea what I'm talking about. It basically means it's got a computer that can measure the ride height of the car much more accurately than a normal springs and dampers suspension setup. So if you imagine the faster you go, the more the car is squashed down onto the road with a springs and dampers car. The problem with that is the car springs back up again when it gets to a slow corner. And so the ride height increases and a lot of the downforce under the car is created by the gap between the floor and the ground. So you don't want that big gap. You want it to stay low. So what you have with an active car is the ability to keep it at the optimum ride height at all times, no matter how fast you're going. And so that was an aerodynamic massive advantage. And if you look at photographs of the 93 car, it almost looks like it's the suspension's broken because it looks like it's literally flat on the ground. There's hardly any gap. And the front ride height we could control by 1 millimeter, and it was measured in 5 millimeters off the front of the ground, and the rear of the car was about 20 or 30 millimeters. It was nothing, but it could control it. The computer can do all this controlling. So we had the ability to play with the platform that the car was on. So it's also a platform control device. So you could tilt it, you could lift the back when you wanted to. Sometimes when you accelerate, you want it to squat. It was a lot of fun to play with.
God, Carlos, those debriefs must have been fun, mustn't they?
Well, you know, it was basically, I'll tell you one story, just to give you some idea. It was Paddy Lowe was the famous guy who I worked with, who worked on the system and the control system of the car. I'd say, okay, so what do you want me to do? And he said, well, what do you want to do? I can do anything. I can make the car do anything you like. I can make it bank, lean into a corner like a motorcycle. I can make it lean the other way, like a sidecar outfit. it could make it do whatever you wanted. And that was a whole new world.
Obrigado, Carlos. And the next question, please.
Hi, Damon, Tom, and Natalie. This is Catherine from the lovely state of North Dakota in the U.S. I'm a brand new F1 fan as of this year, and I am completely obsessed. But I'm wondering if you think there will ever be a time in the near future when there will be at least a few women on the grid. I enjoy keeping up with W Series. Jamie Chadwick and Alice Powell are awesome. And I noticed Aston Martin added Jess Hawkins as a driver ambassador this year as well. There have got to be plenty of very talented women who deserve a shot at F1, right? Thank you for your insight, and I really love the podcast.
Yes, yes, and yes again, Catherine. It's going to happen. It's just a matter of time. We need to be doing more to support women coming into the sport, but it is happening. It is still 88% male in this sport, which is bonkers, really, when you think about it. But there is talent coming through, and we have a responsibility to shine the light on that talent. And we have a responsibility to show young women that coming into F1, in whatever capacity, not just driving, is a viable career option. And we only do that by having relatable role models. So there's girls up and down the paddock, and we have to bring them to the attention of the fans to show them that it's an exciting and meritocratic place to be.
Catherine, North Dakota. Yeah, fantastic. You're interested in finding out or hoping that someone's going to make the breakthrough. And you mentioned some of the great names already who are making a name for themselves in the W Series. And the W Series is designed to make a platform for female drivers to show their stuff. So that's working, I think, in that respect. And there have been obviously other female drivers throughout history who've made it into a Formula One. So it can be done. It needs maybe more numbers. I think that's the thing is if you take a pool of 1,000 people, you know, maybe 1 in 1,000 people have got what it takes to be in Formula One. So we need to widen the pool. And that's what the W Series is hoping to do. It's trying to entice people in.
And Damon, you need to get the girls coming in at karting.
I think they do come in, Tom, don't they? They do come in karting. I mean, there's quite a lot of... And don't forget that Max Verstappen's mum was a karter as well, and quite a successful one.
And his sister.
All of that is true, but we just need... I feel that's, you know, of 100,000 kids coming into karting, what percentage of those are female? We need a greater number coming in at that level.
Okay, so it is all about perception, and therefore it is our responsibility to be shouting from the rooftops that there is nothing that precludes a woman, physical or otherwise, in terms of driving a car, you know? And I think that we just have to change and break down these barriers that it's a man's world. It's not anymore. And I chatted to Jamie Chadwick before she started the W Series, and she said one of the key points for her for the W Series was the fact that it was allowing track time. She used to race against Lando when they were teenagers and often beat him, but she wasn't getting the track time. She wasn't pounding in lap after lap. And W Series offers her the opportunity to do it. I mean, now she's won it for a second time, maybe not for a third year, but we just need to keep creating opportunities. And it's about building perception, reality, perception, reality. And then suddenly you've opened the whole world up and said, you know what, this is a sport that you're all very much welcome and invited into.
And Jamie is a Williams driver, isn't she? It'd be wonderful to see her do some FP1s next year.
And I think the point is that you have to be able to turn on the telly and see relatable role models that you want to emulate. But it's down to us as broadcasters of the sport to say, you know what? There is so much opportunity. People ask me all the time, is Formula One sexist? And my answer every time is no. When you're in, it's a meritocracy and you've got the opportunity to flourish. It's getting in that's the hard part. And that is all about perception. We have an absolute responsibility to open this up. And that's what we can do through this podcast. That's what we can do through every bit of content we ever generate.
Those are great questions, and I think it's fantastic that we're hearing from all of you out there across the planet, wherever you might be. So if you've got a burning question that you really want to know the answer to, then send in a voicemail message to askdamonhill@gmail.com.
I think we leave COTA, both literally, physically and metaphorically, in mine and Damon's case, with really full hearts and sort of bolstered by the passion that we've seen from the American fans. It would be great to see a third race. I'd love to see it in New York, still my favourite city in the world. And I think that there's such an appetite for it. I don't know, I felt such a massive sense of pride of being involved with a sport that is constantly asking the questions, pushing boundaries, taking it to new audiences, bringing on fans like Catherine and women, girls, boys, all from every corner of the earth are interested in this sport. And it's such a privilege for us to work in it and to be a part of it.
I'd like to see it go west, Pinks. I feel next year we've got Miami covering the East Coast. We've got Austin covering Central.
Okay.
And is there a more iconic racetrack in the US than Long Beach? Let's head there. I think it would be an awesome, awesome racetrack. It's a track that race fans in the US know, understand, and...
Do they still race at Long Beach?
Yeah, IndyCar's there. It's a very short track. Okay. We may have to sort of find a way of lengthening it.
There's so many... I mean, it's a big place, America. There's lots of places you can have motor racing. I mean, you're right. You want to be somewhere where there... You want to be close to a population centre and it wants to be a nice place to go. You don't want to put it in some industrial park somewhere that no one's going to go to.
Well, Damon, that's why Austin. Austin works so well for that exact reason.
That's true. They've got so much space. But just imagine the Manhattan skyline as the backdrop for a Formula One race. Oh,
I don't think we should leave out. We shouldn't leave out. I mean, a number of our callers have come from various far-flung places in the United States. I don't think we should leave out North Dakota or Alaska. I think we definitely should still put them on the list. You know, why not have an Anchorage? Yeah.
Ice racing.
Or something like that. I don't know.
Yes.
Somewhere out of the ordinary.
Well, look, as ever, it's been a pleasure. Thanks, chaps.
Great to have you back, Nats. Tom, we've enjoyed that, haven't we?
Yeah, it's been great. And what a race to reflect on. And I can't wait for Mexico. Only 2 weeks.
I can't believe there's going to be more of this. I can't take it anymore.
F1 Nation has been produced by Formula One in association with Audio Boom Studios.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part?
That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at honda.com.